Hey guys, what's up? We're the Story Crafters. My name is Jeff. Directly below me, we have Nicole, Game Master Moms. Directly next to her, we have Charlie, the Ink GM. And above Charlie, we have Jared, the world's okayest crafter. Welcome back to the show. If this is the first time tuning in, we have four other episodes for you to watch, so you should absolutely go do that. They're incredibly fun to listen to, at least I think so. I'm a little biased. Yeah, this is number five. How are we at number five already?
Episode 5.
This is crazy. But thank you for tuning in if this is your first time, and thank you for your continued support if this is not your first time. And as usual, we're just going to jump right into this, guys. Let's roll initiative, shall we?
Hey.
Let's do it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, the tradition continues. That's a 4.
Okay. I broke tradition.
I got a 10.
Okay.
What'd you get, Jeff?
I got an 18.
Whoa.
I got an 8.
Is that allowed?
I don't know. Normally, I either tie somebody or I roll really low.
Yeah. Like,
I think that's how it's been every episode.
There you go.
But yeah, I have an 18 here.
Well, this is perfect. We're actually going to go in order of the podcast.
We are.
We're going to go Jeff, Nicole, myself, and then Jared.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Nice.
If I was good at editing, there'd be some cool little like thing there. But I'm not good at editing like that. Or maybe there will be. Who knows? But what I was up to since our last podcast recording, I continue to go down the track of my crafting kind of like rabbit hole I went down the other time when I was crafting all the carnival terrain. And that game session went well. It was kind of interesting, but it was good. But I ended up getting inspired for a coming up session that the players are going to be meeting somebody. And they're kind of in this like hovel kind of thing, like this like broken witch's hut kind of. So I just went one night, I got home from work, I didn't have Eli, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to craft it and paint it in one night. And so I crafted this thing one night. Individual bricks, individual shingles, and that was the first time I've done individual bricks and shingle work before, and it looks amazing, but holy shit, I was like going cross-eyed like trying to do this and make sure everything is like perfectly I was going nuts. But that airbrush that I got in episode 1, I think, I've gotten a little bit better at it, and with the help of that, it made painting it super fast.
Nice.
So the bulk of the process was really just slicing the foam.
Nice.
And yeah, that was pretty much I think crazy busy at work. We've gotten ridiculous amounts of events and stuff, and we're all drowning, but it's all right. At someday, the sun will shine again, and we will have time to paint plastic people and play fairy tale games.
So, spring semester, man. It's busy.
It's crazy. No sign of stopping.
That higher ed life.
it's nuts. We're just like, can we take a nap or something, please? But that's kind of what I was up to. I haven't really gotten a whole lot of chances to really do like the hobby too much. It's just kind of been life, and I guess that's how it is sometimes. So
yeah,
that's how it goes.
Yeah
absolutely.
Nicole, what have you been up to?
Well, I feel like mine certainly segues well from yours, like that's how life goes sometimes, because I just got over the flu and a sinus infection, and I was like legit sick, like had a fever for 7 days straight. So that my life is still kind of recovering from like the haze of being sick for a week, because I like, what day is it? I'm not sure.
Thursday.
Yes.
Maybe Thursday. I don't know.
Yeah. So. Day that ends in Y.
Yeah. For so. Our listeners, we were supposed to record a couple days ago, but we couldn't because Nicole was under the weather. So we're definitely glad you're feeling better.
Yes, thank you. I've been struggling over here, but I'm back, and I managed to use some of my sick moments on the couch to finally organize my photos and videos and content from IckyCon. So I was able to get some of that out finally, even though that was now, I don't know, a month ago. And I made it to my friendly local game store to pick up this beautiful thing.
So good.
For those of you that are not watching, I got the new Monster Manual for Wizards of the Coast. It's so thick. It's so big. And I got like one of the last copies that my local game store had of like the really pretty cover. So that's I've just been, you know, sitting around and paused.
Hi.
I've yet to get my hands on a physical copy of the Monster Manual. I've just been scrolling through the digital on D&D Beyond. Mm-hmm. But my word, the artwork is incredible.
It's nuts.
It's amazing. Art. The art is wild.
I follow a lot of the artists. Come on, Mama, let's go fix the movie. D&D, Magic the Gathering, and some of the other franchises. Because a lot of those artists do very similar things. They post sometimes like sneak peeks or projects like partially the way they're working through it. Mm-hmm. And that's like where I first heard that they were redesigning all the dragons. And I saw a couple of the sneak peeks and I was like, these look amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My personal favorite is the adult green dragon. I mean, they're all incredible, but the adult green dragon artwork, if you haven't looked at it yet in the new Monster Manual, definitely go check it out.
Yes, my personal favorite is the adult black dragon because I love the elongated the spinal column in each of the vertebrae, and it looks so cool. But that was it's still currently my favorite. But what is coming up for a second might surpass that is the WizKids just sent out an email about the I think it's the purple Dracolich mini. That that looks incredible, but I've not seen the artwork for the purple Dracolich, but the mini though is insane.
Yeah, it's an incredible monster.
Yeah,
definitely one that I'm like green dragon? Slowly I think it's the adult. I'm pretty sure it's the adult because what I love too is that they took the time and they did artwork for the wormling, the young dragon, adult dragon, and ancient dragon for
Yeah,
it's awesome, right?
The young green dragon where it's like underneath the boat. Oh, that's sick.
The one I'm thinking of.
The adult one. Wait, no, is that the adult one? I don't know. Let's get back to Nicole.
I'm just back like in the art now. I'm like,
I know it's
yes.
I just pulled it up on D&D Beyond. Yeah.
Yeah, the art is so stunning, and I just, I could just look at it for hours. I don't know if I've read a single word in it other than, like, maybe some of the monster titles, but the art, I just, I'm loving it. I'm soaking it all in.
I love that they changed, like, from a one bite and two claw attacks, I love that they just changed it to, this has three rend attacks as a DM. I love that because then you can flavor it however you want. You know, if it happens to be that all the players are behind it, well, its tail can swing around and hit them three times, you know, or it can whirl around and, you know, it doesn't always have to be two claws and a bite. I am a big fan of that shift that they made.
And the Tarrasque, like, I love that they've given that like kind of like its own breath weapon. And then they're also changing up instead of the frightful presence just being this clear uniform thing for most big bads, it's a little bit more tailored to it specifically and what that would look like and how that would affect differently from other creatures and doing kind of similar things. It's really nice. You can really tell they put a lot of effort into not trying to necessarily recreate all the monsters, but just to take what's really good and take what they can work on. I think I was listening to an interview like a year or two ago with Chris Perkins, and he was talking about like why they were doing this revamp rather than a whole new edition. And he's like, because they did put a lot of time in fifth edition to make it, and it is really pretty solid. But they're like, but we also see now after 10 years of play testing, right? I mean, that's essentially what better way to call it, from the public. And he's like, we have a lot to work on that we can take that feedback, and instead of revamping and designing everything, just strengthening it. And I was like, oh, I love that. So yeah, seeing all the new books being thicker is awesome.
Yeah, I remember that interview that you're referring to. Yeah, that was a good one. They did it live. They did one of those like D&D. Can't remember what it was, but it was when they were building up the hype for 5.5. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or 1D&D or whatever it's actually called now.
It's just D&D.
I don't know.
You roll a clicky clack. It makes noises. You make funny characters. So.
Everyone has a great time. Yes.
Everyone has a great time.
Yahtzee.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, Nicole, you were sick. You read some Monster Manual stuff.
Yeah, I mean, looked at more than read, honestly. The reading will be on the second pass. Right now, I'm just looking at the pretty pictures.
It's a picture book.
This before is the way.
It is. And then other than that, just been doing some writing. I'm really like putting a lot of my writing energy into finishing up the core game book for the Adventures in Etheria tabletop role-playing game, so working on that.
That's so exciting. That's awesome.
Can't wait. Mm-hmm.
How about you, Charlie?
So I think I'd mentioned last episode, my non-D&D life has been very busy, a lot of work, which unfortunately has resulted in me having to cancel most of my D&D sessions because I've just been working overtime or had other stuff and everything. So I've not played a lot of D&D. Thankfully, I have been able to play some D&D, so I am still grateful for that. Specifically, I had a really big one-shot adventure that I did for my birthday, which was a ton of fun. Got a bunch of good players together, and we had a great time, and that was a lot of fun specifically for me because I got to do a part of my homebrew world, a one-shot to flesh out some history, and that was just so satisfying for me. And seeing these players at my table that have been in my campaigns for years and getting to shed some light on things and share some lore that of why things are the way they are in certain places and other stuff. And they were just like, what? Like finding out one person is a lich, that was a big revelation. It was really cool. My favorite part of that whole session was right towards the end. They killed the lich, but of course, you know, it's going to come back because they don't know where the phylactery is. Except there is this lich is one of several generals, we'll say, for an even larger big bad. And so having killed that lich, they saw the body move, and then these fingers come out from the mouth and then split it apart, and this god came out from its corpse and was standing there, and had this whole big list of this god that is this big bad. And they were just like, watching their faces, they were just absolutely like, hold on, we thought this was the bad, and there's a bigger bad that they worship and work for, and they're one of like seven. Oh crap. It was really cool. That was a lot of fun.
It's awesome.
And then I've got a big private game that I've been asked to run this weekend, which I'm very excited for. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that'll be really good. But the biggest things D&D wise that have come up since last we've met is going to Awesome Con. Three of my one-shot modules. We're super excited and going to be stoked for that. And the other one is GaryCon. I'm officially going to GaryCon, and I am absolutely excited. It's going to be so incredible, and I'm excited because I'm going with someone who's a vendor and going to be part of out and everything, so nice. I get to be there for the whole con, set up everything every day, and it's going to be a blast. That's cool. Yeah, that's so I'm really fun. Excited for that. Yeah,
what are you most looking for you for that GaryCon? Are you like going for anything specifically, like, or are you just the whole thing?
Honestly, all of it. Like, there's going to be so many incredible people that are there that I'm really excited to, you know, hopefully meet and you know, at least say hi to, if not talk to for a minute or two. The booth and table I'm going to be at, a lot of people are going to be coming to naturally, which is the Weather Dragon booth. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be at that awesome table. And then one of the things I get to talk about while I'm there is how much I love GMing at his tables, because I really do.
They're sick. They're sick. Yeah.
So,
beautiful tables.
Yeah. So get to talk about D&D, get to talk about the coolest table that I've ever GM'd at and get to GM at a regular basis, and meet, you know, just some of the coolest and best people in the industry. I'm so excited. It's going to be such a fun week. Honestly, I don't know. I decided to wear my favorite Hawaiian shirt, because I plan to, I know they do that one of the days. It's a Hawaiian shirt theme day. It's just going to be cool. I'm really excited. Trying to go in with very little expectations, but just a lot of excitement, enthusiasm, and hopefully I can save a few dollars between now and then, so I can, because I know there's going to be things I'm going to want to buy when I'm there. So
sure.
Yeah,
that's going to be so much fun though. I can't wait to hear about that. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. We might have to, just saying that, we might even have to try to do like a recording session one night when I'm there from the hotel or something.
The topic the topic is Charlie tells us all about his day at con.
Yeah, yeah. You have a mandatory needing to go live too while you're there.
Oh, 100%, 100%, absolutely.
Even if you're just live and stick us in your pocket just so we can like observe, that'd be great.
Yes.
And you'll like printouts of our heads like in your little like pocket or something, so you can just see us. Like,
yes, absolutely. Yeah. I'm just really excited about the cons, because like the biggest con I've ever been to previously was just local ones here in the area in Hampton Roads, which have been great and have been a lot of fun, you know, but they're in the, you know, couple hundreds to couple, you know, maybe 1,000 or 2 attendees. So to go to like awesome con, which I think is like almost like 100,000 people or something like that. And then on the flip side, GaryCon, which is not nearly as big volume wise, but is like the biggest con when it comes to who's there in the TTRPG community. Wild. I'm just so grateful I get to go to both. So, yeah.
That's so cool.
I keep like playing with the idea of just buying a couple tickets to Gen Con, because the badges just went on sale last weekend. Yes. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to get there or who's going to go with me, but I want to go so bad that I almost want to just buy the tickets and be like, well, I got tickets, so I have to figure it out now.
Yeah.
It's only like 2.5 hours from where I live, and I've never gone. So I'm really hoping. I need to look into the specifics of it. Hoping.
Let's go.
That's funny. I've never even gone to a con.
Dude, Jeff, we're going to get you there, man.
I know. Yeah. I need to go.
Yeah.
I need to go. What con are we talking? Gen Con? Let's all just plan on going to Gen Con.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's go to Gen Con. It's this summer.
Yeah, I was. That was another thing I actually got to do, was I was recently on the, Nicole, I know you were on the Side Quest podcast.
Yes.
And I got to be on the Dapper Meeples podcast, and they're excited. They're going to Gen Con again, and nice. They got to go before, and we were talking about that, and I was like, man, that would be a really good one to go to.
Yeah. It's big. That's yeah. for sure. Yeah, that's cool.
I could totally make that
Yeah. So for
me, I just pulled it up. I was like, we're going to Gen Con.
Do it.
Totally make that
manifest
work.
It.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
Man.
So for me, I had a blast in my last D&D session, coming off the heels of a player death. The goal was to get this player's new character introduced in this session, but we had to kind of, you know, it wasn't just going to happen immediately. So I texted my friend, this player, said, hey, what do you think about helping me run the first combat? And it was by far the most fun I've ever had. We my players had sailed towards this new land that's very like marshland. And so one of my players and I both got to RP as a troll. It was incredible. We were, you know, the stereotypical, like, overly confident, way too dumb sort of brute trolls. It was just the best. It was truly so much fun to have somebody to like riff off of and stuff. And I was actually proud of my players because they actually didn't kill them. They actually, like, you know, trolls regenerate and they keep coming back. So they gave them a little, you know, what for. But the trolls actually got up and they actually kind of talked to them and let them go. So I was maybe a first for my players to not just try to nuke everything. So that was a lot of fun. We did then get to proceed and get the new character for that player introduced, which is always fun. I love doing player introductions, especially when it's an ongoing story, just seeing how that dynamic is going to shift. They were playing a rogue. They're now playing a cleric. So it'll be a big shift for them too, as far as play style and everything. So I'm excited about that. Beyond that, crafting, I've been very busy. I have a very, very big project that I have now started working on that I actually can't really talk about. Many details will be shared in the future when the time is right. But very excited about it. It's going to be a lot of work. So it's a little bit daunting, but in the best possible way. So a lot of carving of foam and painting of things. So I've actually messaged Jeff yesterday or the day before, asking him, hey, you still like your airbrush? Because I think I will be needing to take the dive into that, even if it's only for priming.
You should.
Because it's going to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
So
let's pull some threads. Is this like a collaboration? Can you tell us that?
It is a collaboration. And beyond that, I really can't can't share more. So yeah, very excited about it though. It will all in due time be shared in both, you know, on here talking about it, and I will be documenting the process so that I have plenty of content to share when I'm able. So
audience, pretty cool. Truthfully, he's not just like baiting you all. He's also baiting us too. We don't know what this is.
So I was excited. Actually about to say, on whatever platform you're listening to this or watching this on, comment what you think Jared is crafting and who it's with.
Guess. That's a good
I like that.
And if you can get both of them, maybe we'll do something special. I don't know.
There you go.
But
I can neither confirm nor deny any of the speculation.
It's all subject to if we actually commit to doing something. But enough. For real though, comment below who you think it is and what is Jared crafting, and we'll find out together.
Hey, that being said, let's all pitch our guesses.
There we go. Hold on, let me get my poker face going
on camera. So this like, has to be like
right, I know. On the head. Let me get my poker face going.
Man.
Okay. I'm gonna say Chaotic Studios. Because I know you did something with them before.
I have worked with Chaotic Studios before. Yeah, great people.
Yep.
Love Chaotic Studios. Yeah,
that's gonna be good company.
Okay.
Love it.
I'm gonna say Cigar Battle Mats, or whatever.
I really love Cigar Box Battles. Yeah, big
that's
fan.
That's what it is. Cigar Box Battles. That's what it is. Yeah,
If you need a battle mat, that's the place to go. For sure.
I'm just gonna go like totally off and say it's not so much a professional collab as like a personal thing, and it's for like some kind of like wedding or baby shower or something like that.
I love that.
Secret event in the future. A proposal or something, maybe. I don't know.
One of you may be right.
We'll find out how wrong we all are.
Maybe I'm also wrong. We have to say.
Oh my gosh. Cool. Man, you guys have been up to some cool stuff.
I will add one more thing that I neglected, and then I know we all have something that maybe we could talk about. Not So Miniatures. Really awesome company that is making like incredible, like 3 foot tall miniatures that are scalable terrain, and some of them are even monsters, and they're amazing. They're so cool. And their 3D printing is resin based, and we're working together on a few things, and they sent me a couple to be able to do like a review video, which I'm excited to film this weekend. And just excited to go live stream and do some painting, because it's been forever since I've done painting. But nice. Like, guys, these miniatures, man, the detail that is on them is incredible. I mean, I've seen some really awesome stuff before, but these companies and files that they get are so detailed and so well crafted. They're absolutely amazing. One of the ones I got is with my homebrew setting, you know, Arcane Adventures after Apocalypse. One of them is a tombstone that is got skulls and is also a zombie, and then another one is like a really like legendary set of armor that's been animated and haunted and possessed. So rather than your traditional like Curse of Strahd armor that, you know, got a couple hit points, like, I mean, this is like a legendary suit of armor from some level 20 hero that is possessing it. It's so cool looking. And then the biggest is this massive guy. He's like, I say he's like this big because he's like five times the size of a regular miniature. And just the level of detail and stuff on that is just astounding. So, but we also all got another box that we got to unbox. If this might be a good segue to talk about.
Firelight Fables candles.
Yeah.
Man, I've got mine right there.
Yes.
Did we all I was gonna say, I was like, wait a second, did that all just happen perfectly like that? Like,
that would have been awesome.
Mine are actually behind me, but out of reach. So
that is fair.
That would have been amazing.
We rehearsed this.
We really did.
I have a tea light.
Hey,
there we go.
I've got the Thieves Guild tea light burning right next to me, which smells quite divine. But y'all, can we seriously, like, okay, even if you don't like candles, I guarantee you that you know someone who does like candles, and you should just be like, hey, here's an awesome candle for you, and give them this candle from this company, Firelight Fables, and it is amazing, and you can get 15% off using code StoryCrafters.
I mean, they're absolutely incredible. They're wood wick. We got the big one that they gave us was Frosted Veils. Ooh. And my wife and I, we both work from home, and so we've been burning it off and on throughout the day since we've got it, and we're like maybe a quarter of the way through.
What did everybody get? Which sets did you guys do?
Yeah, I got my big one is High Seas, which is lovely. It's like a little bit cedary, but mostly it's kind of like sea salt-y. So good.
That's the same.
I just remembered the term we came up for that.
I also got the High Seas in their larger candle, and it is, I use a wax warmer oftentimes, and they are perfect under a wax warmer. Use that in my last session. It's like basically a light bulb that shines down the candle and Perfect. Perfect for all your high seas adventure.
I will say, sure, if you're not actually burning the wick, you're kind of missing out on some of the like sound effects, because it has a nice little like fire crackling noise that changes every once in a while.
It's a large wood wick too. It's nice and wide.
Yeah. It's like that.
It's like a whole sensory experience.
Yeah, I got the Frosted Veils, which is snow powder, red berries, and fir needles, and it is absolutely the most, like, it's the best winter scented candle.
I was gonna say, like, that my wife and I have like ever Christmas. Had.
But like in the best way. Like some of them, they seem like almost like a little too artificial or anything. But I mean, like, we've burned this every single day, and we have not gotten tired of it in the slightest.
I will butcher this, but all of the products that they use are all safe for pets. They're all natural ingredients.
Yeah.
Truly fantastic.
Yeah, it says coconut apricot wax candle, which is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So none as of Jen the gross said, stuff in there. It's all just the natural stuff.
Yeah, let us know how it tastes.
As Jeff said, use code STORYCRAFTERS for 15% off your next purchase at firelightfables.com for all your fantasy and TTRPG-inspired scents for enhancing immersion and inspiring creativity.
They're awesome.
You should. Hell yeah.
Man, I think that's a good time as any to transition into a very special lore segment that's going to be brought to us by Nicole, and so she's going to take us into the world of Etheria. We'll see you in a bit. And it's going to be all here. And hey, welcome back, guys. We are about to jump into Nicole's section of the lore here, and this lore segment is truly special as it is coming to you guys from her own homebrew world, Etheria, and maybe we'll get a little look into the book that's coming out. So Nicole, take it away.
Yeah, this is like a little bit spoilers. I don't know if I've actually publicly talked much about Etheria and the geography and the lore, so buckle up, you're getting some sneak peeks into stuff that's not released yet. Yeah, so Etheria is my basically homebrew setting that I do all of my kids' D&D type games in. It's also the setting for my book series and the setting for the tabletop role-playing game Adventures in Etheria that will come out at some point, maybe this year. I don't know. We'll have to see. Etheria itself is actually the name of the continent. So it's a large continent with different regions. You can kind of think of it like similar to like Westeros in like the Song of Ice and Fire. And through the middle of Etheria runs a large river all the way through. And the area I'm going to talk about today is in the Ester Vale region, which is little area in between two mountain ranges that the river runs right through. And to the north of this vale, there are large mountain ranges. They're called the Solene Mountains, and they're very high and mysterious and pocked with a bunch of moss-covered cave entrances that look like they're just ready for some adventurers to come explore. And at the base of these mountains is the Heroes Academy of Etheria, which is the main setting for my first book, which now has a name, An Unexpected Quest.
So cool.
Most of that book takes place in the Academy, the Heroes Academy, which is, you know, kind of a place, I guess you could imagine it similar to like a Hogwarts, right? It's where the young adventurers from all over Etheria come to study and hone their skills before going out to be true heroes and go on quests. So that's a little bit about that area. The main town, which I feel like is like your starter town whenever you're entering this world of Etheria, is called Farion. And Farion's just a cute little town with the mountains to the north, and to the south and east it's bordered by this lush forest. Really, the town has pretty limited sites or points of interest. It's just your little small town. But some of the important ones that you will definitely come across if you play the Adventures in Etheria game are the town center fountain, which is an old big circular fountain with a weathered plaque on the front that tells you about a legend for potentially gaining good luck if you throw coins into this fountain. The fountain is really the main kind of landmark of this little town of Farion. And then out around the Farion, there's of course a tavern. We need a meeting place for the townspeople to get a good hot meal and listen in for some local gossip. There's also a graveyard, which we'll say is peaceful and quiet for now.
Ooh, okay.
And a market with some stalls where you can go buy some goods and meet some vendors that are selling their wares. So that's, I think that's about all the spoilers I'm going to give for now, but just kind of to give like a little brief lay of the land of the starting area in Etheria that you guys will see when you read my book.
God, that's so cool.
That's awesome. What's the name of the big river that runs through the continent?
That is a great question, and I cannot even remember right now. I would have to pull up the map to tell you.
Okay,
Jeff, put it in the show notes.
That sounds incredible. I'm so beyond excited to get to explore the world and start to see, you know, this world that, you know, we've been seeing bits and pieces for over the last several months. Yeah. As you've shared tidbits on Instagram. I'm so excited to see it come to life.
I have so many like macro geographical questions I want to ask. Sorry.
He's like, I'm about to tear your world apart.
I'm just so curious. I love world building, but particularly I really love when people reimagine or invent like a planet itself and a new world, truthfully. So I'm curious, like you said, this was like a continent. I'm like, how many other continents are there? Are there any large active volcanoes? How many moons? What do you see at night? You know, like is there aurora borealis kind of thing with the magnetic field that occurs, or are there any major stars that have like any legends or stuff? And
yes to all of that, except it's the only continent. This planet, I guess, where the continent is, it was hit with a meteor, and that's what actually created the continent in the first place. And the continent's actually a really cool design. I'll get with you, Charlie. I'll show it to you because I feel like you'll appreciate it.
I'm already loving all of this. I'm like, this is fantastic. This is like the distant sequel to Waterworld, it sounds like. That is so cool that there's just one massive land chunk. I love that. That is so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man. Oh my God. Lots of adventures to be had. Well, I'm planning to build it all out and share it with you guys one piece at a time.
Is this tailored towards kids still, right? Like, is this the main focus is kids still?
Yeah, cool. kids or mixed groups. I mean, I think it'll be good for like beginner players that are adults too. Cool. But it definitely will have less mature themes in the
I love that, because then that is like truly you can use that for anyone then, because you can always, it's easier to add than it is to take away, you know.
Absolutely.
That's that's so exciting.
Yeah, and I hope that people will. I mean, I'm definitely writing a lot of like pre-written starter adventure kind of things, but really my hope is that people just like take it and run with it and do totally different things than I'd imagined.
I'm going to need the name of the inn so that way I can have my players learn how to teleport to it.
There you go. Yes, there you go. There plane shift.
There we go.
I was just thinking your world would be a really, really cool one to do, to use the Sync RPG supplement that's coming out. That with so much water and everything. That would be so cool. Because you could have so many ocean adventures.
Yes. I've got a little like kind of like merchants and pirates adventure that's in the works in my mind right now.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing out on the pirate theme. Like a lot of like you guys are doing
where pirate it's at, man.
Yeah, dude.
Pirates are get on the pirates, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I throw my players for a third loop and I'm like, you know what, actually, we're gonna do another new campaign.
Yeah. Dude, in my homebrew setting, there's a whole global pirate syndicate called the Hollowed Shadows. There's a larger ocean captain for each of the oceans, and then they have a whole pirate captain that oversees the entire order.
Oh wow.
Yeah, man, go nuts with it. Go don't just dabble in the pirates, like jump into it.
So we just started the exact opposite of a pirate campaign. We're going north into the frozen mountains. Anyways, I digress.
There could be, though, a pirate ship frozen into a glacier from centuries ago. So the pirates are just undead.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Make it so.
Do it. Do it. And the pirate captain's corpse is still haunted and possessed, protecting a treasure that it refuses to give up.
You guys are watching right now in real time them crafting my campaign for me.
What's the name of the podcast?
Hey, GM's gonna GM, man.
GM's gonna GM, that's right.
But yeah, absolutely. We're the freaking story crafters, man. Absolutely. That's right. That's what we do.
That's right.
That's what we do.
Collective storytelling.
Love it.
Is there anything else you want to leak out to the public about what your book is?
I feel like that's enough for now, but I'll keep bringing little tidbits here and there, and then eventually you'll just have to buy the books to find out.
Yeah. I guess we'll find just out have the rest. To buy the book.
Nicole, I want to give you two quick shout outs about what you shared. One, a cemetery. So many people and so many things I read about towns or regions or anything, they don't talk about that all the time. And, you know, especially if you've got an ancient city, right? You're going to have like some kind of like ancient burial grounds or crypts or, you know, a ritual place or waters where, you know, they send bodies off or burn people at. Like you got to incorporate that to some degree. So I love that you do that innately and do it also in what is supposed to be a setting that doesn't have a lot of mature themes. And I love that because it doesn't have to be dark and scary, you know. And so I absolutely love that. I think that's so huge. Shout out to you for that. That is really, really cool. And then there was something else I was going to shout out at you and I can't remember. But just in general, it's badass. Really cool. Love what you're doing. So excited for the books.
I think from like a non-horror side of a cemetery, like a band of skeletons playing like the xylophone on the rib cages and stuff. Like,
yes. There you go. Yeah, they're friendly.
They're friendly. They're just hanging out. They're vibing. They're
just an undead bard.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Just hanging around.
Just trying to make some milk money.
Oh, man. Well, with that, we're going to go ahead. We're going to transition here and go fill your drink. Go do what you got to do. We're going to come back here in a minute and we're going to talk about GMing for new players and well-experienced players and both of them at the table at the same time. So we'll catch you in a minute. See ya. Welcome back to the show. We're about to get into our main topic here, which is GMing for brand new players and experienced players. We've all been there. We've all started as the new player at the table. Mm-hmm. We've all started as the fresh GM. So, guys, I'm going to kick it off here, but start thinking about how you handle this. Personally, I started GMing as a brand new GM with 3 out of the 4 players were all brand new. We had all just jumped into it, essentially. I had played a few sessions before then with my friends, and they're like, hey, you know, I was like, I really like this. Then I had one of my other friends like, hey, do you want to run a game? I was like, that sounds pretty cool. So I just kind of jumped into it, and I ended up finding out that I enjoyed GMing actually more than being a player. And I do love being a player. Like, I love playing Cargrim. If I get a chance to play Cargrim, I'm going to play Cargrim. I just like it. It's fun. But being able to play all those other characters as well is just even more fun, because I got so many voices in my head anyways. Like, I got to get them out somehow. So from a GM perspective, being new, it can be scary, though, too. Like, especially if you're GMing for people that are new. Because especially like the world that we live in these days, a lot of times, like, people get interested in D&D from social media, right? Like Twitch or YouTube, Critical Baldur's Role Gate. Or Baldur's Gate. Exactly. Yeah. Critical Role, Baldur's Gate, Dimension 20, 20 sided, what is it? 20 sided realms or whatever it is. I can't remember what the other one is. Yes. The other big one. And so they see these like professional over like just knowing everything about everybody, and they kind of expect that sometimes, which is like, hopefully you can't. And so that's kind of intimidating a little bit. And I'll be honest, like, I have those, like, I GM for people that have been playing longer than I've been even knowing about Dungeons and Dragons. And so I just kind of, from a perspective of like, I think I was actually talking about this the other week about imposter syndrome almost, and like the Matt Mercer effect, which is kind of a little different than like what this topic is. It still pertains to the topic, because it's like, how do you GM for new and experienced players, right? Which also, I feel like it applies to the GM as well. Like, how do you GM yourself as a experienced player or a new player? But I kind of feel like these times where, like, I have to deliver this like perfect game. And so for like new players, I kind of go out of my way to make sure that they get like not a spotlight per se, but like kind of like everyone knows at the table, like, hey, so-and-so is brand new, right? It's kind of like a team of like, it's not just me as the GM being like, okay, cool, like, you're the brand new player. I personally am going to focus all of everything on you. It's kind of like from our table, at least with me, everyone is super helpful. And like, oh, you know, maybe they'll say like, you know, oh, over the table real fast, like, you know, here's kind of like a quick little lowdown of what goes on. Combat especially, like, here's how the action economy is, you know, and they're like super helpful with that. But also too, I'm really lenient with like, a player wants to do something and I'm like, okay, like, that's fine, like, let's go ahead and do that, and then here's the outcome. And then like, you can see like the regret like immediately in that new player's eyes, is like, that was not what I was intending to do. Yeah. And it's like, okay, let's pack that up real quick. You know, we'll reset the stage kind of, because like, a lot of new players don't understand the verbiage of like when they're saying like, oh, I, you know, I go over to the table and I start looking for stuff. It's like, okay, cool. Like, you start looking for things, but then they're like, they say something that they want to do, but they mean what they want to do, but they say it in a different way. So then you as the GM interpret interpreted as one way, like, actually that's not what I want to do. And then it's fun watching the evolution, at least I think so, of the players getting from like, I don't know what I'm doing, to now I've got players now that have been playing for, you know, three, four years that's like they're intentionally trying to break the game at this point now, like, which is super cool. And then for how I GM for experienced players, kind of in the same vein, of I just like to have fun. I'm not super serious, and I really play on the rule of cool until it's not cool. But I don't really, like, when I'm GMing, I'm more in, like, more in character, more like there's less like voice of God type thing, you know, like the narrator, if it were, right? It's as like everything is more in character, more RP heavy. And that's kind of like what I'll do for the two different styles. And typically my more experienced players will have more intricate combats, more intricate traps, things like that. The yeah. normal things that you would expect. Even, I mean, and even so, I think trolls are kind of interesting for like a considered to be a low level fight, because you can't kill a troll without putting fire on it.
Yeah, and that is fun though with new players, because they
it is.
Typically don't know that, and they're like, what?
But yeah,
new players,
yeah,
they are
also
really
very dangerous.
Yeah,
they can just keep messing you up.
Basilisk is a creature that I like to kind of experiment too, because it's like, well, are you looking at the basilisk or are you not?
Ooh, and you can that's kind a of good see one.
Like years turning, even with experienced players, you know, unless they've yeah. fought that specific creature before.
Yeah,
mechanics like that I think are really fun to be like. It's not straightforward, you know. My first encounter was on the path to Phandalin, you know, fighting goblins. Mm-hmm. It's fighting goblins in that scenario is about as straightforward as it gets, you know, yeah. which was yeah. great for my first encounter. But mm-hmm. I think it's fun to then be able to introduce something different with a different mechanic like that. And it's like, yeah. okay, no, it's not just firing a bow or casting a spell. There mm-hmm. is, it's a dynamic, you know, game that you do have to kind of think and strategize and things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's about all I got for it. I mean, that's my take on it. What you got for us?
You know, I was thinking of this in a couple different ways, because most of the experience level difference at my tables ends up being more like age difference, right? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, like a 5-year-old is not super seasoned in playing D&D, whereas like maybe their parent who's playing with us is. Yeah. Not necessarily, but sometimes. I don't know. I feel like maybe my answer is the same, whether it's a like mixed ages or a mixed experiences table. And maybe this makes me a lazy GM, but I'm a pretty new GM myself, so I'm going to just take it. Typically, the main thing that I will do is, like, if I have more experienced players at the table, I will let them, like, do stuff for me. Like, I let them help me with stuff. I let them, like, sometimes I'll go, like, whisper in their ear and be like, we're about to role play this thing and I need you to play along, okay? Like, can you bring in the other people? Yeah. I kind of, like, recruit them to be, like, assistant dungeon masters during the thing, because you know, it gives them something to do and they usually like being more of a part of it, and takes a little of the pressure off of me and tends to make for a more creative, like, interesting game, because then it's not just resting on me and what I come up with. It's like more of that shared storytelling experience even more. So yeah, I just recruit them. I just pull them in. I'm like, oh, you're better at D&D than me? Great. You can help me with them.
I was actually going to ask you, one of the questions that I had for you specifically was, how do you keep your more experienced players with that different of an age group still engaged and entertained? Because, I mean, kids are kids. You need to appeal to a child. You know,
yeah.
And an adult is going to think, yeah, you know. So, but I think you just kind of answered my question there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I can tell that they're like kind of getting bored or like not super engaged, then I'll usually just like give them something to do. Like, hey, can you, in addition to playing your character, can you also run like this NPC that just showed up or this combat encounter or something like that? But I also have told a couple of the adults at my table that like they need to get over themselves because it's not about them. And if they want to just go play D&D with adults, then they should go find another table.
There you go. Sometimes you gotta set that boundary.
Pop off. Yeah. Okay. No,
that's what I was gonna say. That might be the correct answer of just like, it's not about you, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this isn't just adult D&D time. So if that's what you signed up for, this is not the game for you.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that would go the same thing for if you have a table and you've got mixed experience and you have somebody that's more experienced that's upset, you know, be like, being at this table is voluntary. Like, you're not being forced. Right. If this is not the pace that you want to do, go do something that is purely for people that have been doing this for however many years or sessions that you want, you know.
Yeah.
Man. And I definitely play similar to you, Jeff. I do like rule of cool a whole lot. And every once in a while, like one of the adults at my table will be kind of like a rules Nazi sort of person. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually like, yeah, no, we don't play like that here. We just don't. Like, I'm just not that kind of DM. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I've run into a few of those. I'm like, it must not be fun to be in your head.
I feel like I say this every episode, though. This, to me, is the beauty of D&D, though, is there are the rules, and there are, I'm sure, tables where it is letter of the law through and through, full stop. But you can then adapt it, and you can throw out 90% of the rules if you want to, you know? And that, to me, is why this is great, because it is all collaborative storytelling. Mm-hmm. And you can adapt and create your table to fit your group. And, you know, it might be one group on this night, might be another group. And those two groups might be wildly different from each other. You know, one group might love combat. One group might hate combat and just love puzzles or RP. But that's, you know, it's still all Dungeons and Dragons, you know?
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
To keep on pirate theme, to quote Pirates of the Caribbean, the rules are just natural guidelines.
Yes. Yep. Always a good one.
Yes.
All right, that's what I got. Over to Charlie.
Yeah. But I've had, since I've been doing quite a bit of professional GMing and whatnot, I've had a lot of games that, like, so my three campaigns that I do through Rogue Game Masters, only one of those campaigns has a table full of players that have all played D&D to some experience level prior. My other two groups are very much this, a mix. And when it comes to campaigns, I treat campaigns differently than I do one-shots, where there's a mixed experience at the table. So, like, for instance, with campaigns, I will use an opportunity with a new player when asking them, okay, you know, like, say, for instance, you come in a room, what do you want to do to figure out what's in here, any mysteries, etc. And I'll ask them, I'm like, describe to me what you would like to do. And rather than saying, like, what ability check, right? Because they're still getting familiar with those and learning those. And then based on what they'll say, I'll say, okay, well, I'll tell you what. You talked about wanting to look around. If you just want to look around, you don't want to touch anything, you're worried about triggering a trap or something, that's a perception check. If you want to get your hands involved and actually pull stuff up, look under the rug, you know, tap on the walls, try to find, you know, hollow space. If you want to go through the drawers, look through papers, make an investigation check. You know, your character has, you know, a keen sense of smell. So, you know, perhaps this might be a survival check. If you want to try to go from that angle, or perhaps a nature check, if you want to try to use, you know, more so if you're what kind of sensor in the air that you might be familiar with. And I'll go and I'll give multiple examples. So that way I'm using it as a learning opportunity to help them get more familiar with their different, with the different ability checks, while still presenting them with opportunities and allowing them also time to think on their end too. Because that, I feel like, is what is the worst, whether you are a new player, experienced player, or anything, is just when there's silence at the table that isn't for suspense or something else. Where somebody is, you know, whether you're the GM being like, hold on, guys, let me look through the dungeon master's manual. And you've got this prolonged silence. Or somebody that, you know, during combat, and they're like, hold on, I've got to roll 12 dice and I'm not good at math, so give me about 2 minutes to add this up. You know, there's that silence really breaks things up. So I find opportunities where I can both help educate new players and give them time to think and help present them with options without telling them what to do, but giving them, you know, like the autonomy to pick what they want and just kind of, you know, help them understand what that looks like. It helps fill that space. It keeps the other players engaged at the table. Sometimes your veteran players will be like, oh yeah, can I suggest something? You know, and it gets them involved too. Mm-hmm. But I won't do that for necessarily all the time for a one shot, because we're trying to make the most of our time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I might be like, okay, well, it sounds like, based on what you're explaining, that would be a perception check. You don't want to get your hands involved. Did I hear you right? Yeah. Okay, go ahead and make a perception check. You know, the other thing I'll do too is I have, especially for one shots, I have printed out in my GM binder some reference sheets that I found very helpful that have, like, you know, a condensed version of many of the different frequently asked things or references or stuff that players can do outside of combat, and then a whole separate sheet that is focused just on combat. So that way they have that right there to look at during, you know, the combat rounds in between their turns, or during the gameplay as we're role playing through different stories and story beats and scenes. They can have those and they can look through it and refer to it, and it that way they don't have to constantly be asking, you know, the same thing, and they have a little bit more streamlined and available for them. And I found that to be really, really helpful. Another thing I'll do differently is when it comes to combat as well. I do like to do pretty complicated combat with, like, you know, six different stat blocks of monsters or creatures or NPCs and, you know, layer actions and all kinds of stuff. I'll tend to simplify it a little bit more of how much I'm running and doing on my side. If I have a very new players at the table, so I can be cognizant of making sure, okay, it's their turn. Just so you know, that's a D12. That's not a D20. So you want to get the you know, making sure that, you know, to be aware of those things and call those out, so that we're, again, keeping the combat rolling. Because I've had that happen where, you know, new players not familiar with the dice, and they ask which one, where they roll it, and then all of us are like, really? It's like the third time you've rolled a 2. What dice are you rolling? And they're like, this one? And we're like, that's a D4. Wow, okay. No wonder you've not been, none of your attacks have been making contact. Yeah. You know, so I try to, with new players at the table, I try to not burden myself during combat or other things, so I can be an added resource and keep an extra set of eyes out and help them. And also just helps the rest of the players at the table too, right? Because if they're doing the best they can during combat, dice will be dice. But obviously, if they don't know their dice well enough and they're rolling D4s instead of D20s, obviously that's not happening. But typically, it's like new players I find often get D12s and D20s mixed up, or D10s and D12s, the D8s and D4s also. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so those are a few little things that I do that I have found that really helps keep things moving, prevent silence at the table, but also not, like, railroading new players, right? And presenting opportunities for veteran players to kind of like, you know, I'll ask them sometimes, like, what is, if it's like a first session in a campaign or something, like I'll ask them, what does your magic look like? And sometimes asking those role-playing things that pull in mechanics will help new players feel like, oh, this isn't just rolling dice, or this isn't, I don't have to just be creative, you know, and just trying to keep the flow. I mean, that's really the biggest thing I think is just the best advice is whatever you can do at your table that you see that helps and works to keep the flow going and reduce the amount of silence between prompts, questions, turns, that's really going to be the best improvement of life and quality for your table with mixed experiences. That's what I found, at least.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like I'm going to kind of repeat a lot of what you said. But I love exactly what you said about with more experienced players, if it is more of a simplistic, not even just in combat, but I'll use combat as the example. If they attack and their attack hits, I ask them to describe it. Go, what does that look like? Give me the flavor. Give me the what does your magic look like, you know, and give them those bonus opportunities, because that then does present opportunities for a new player to be thinking, oh, well, that's cool. I didn't think about my magic could look like that. It doesn't just have to be, you know, straightforward. Another thing that you kind of touched on is I found when I have, which has been limited that I've DM'd for new people, but when I have, I find they're really focused on their character sheets. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I'm a rogue, so my stealth is high. Hey, can I use my stealth? And so I try to communicate to new players of, hey, everybody can do everything. Just because you have a negative one in strength doesn't mean you can't try to hold the door open, you know? Yeah. It might be more difficult for your character, but that doesn't mean they can't do it. You do have skills that you're going to be more proficient at, but you could still roll a 2, whereas the person who has a minus 2 might roll an 18 and they still might do better, you know? So I found I try to explain, like, state what you want to do, much like Charlie was saying, and I'll then kind of call for the roll. It's not wrong. There's not a wrong way to do it, but I try to encourage them to be more, I want to try to, you know, find traps versus, hey, can I use my stealth to try to find traps? You know, I try to encourage that more of, don't worry about what your stats on the sheet say. You describe what you want to do, and I will, if it needs a roll, then that'll be my job, and, you know, I'll call for that. I find also with mixed experience, it's kind of just what you present it to be. You know, can always be more complexity. I've had oftentimes where I've prepared something that is about as straightforward as it gets, and my players with a sentence or something have made it more complex. And I'm like, oh, well, I didn't think of that. Oh, let me add that in real quick, you know? So I think, like, if you have a solid base as a DM going into your session of just a general understanding of, here's generally where I think this is going to go. Here's, you know, generally what monsters there are going to be. I find if you can present it clearly, oftentimes the wrinkles just kind of iron themselves out. And once you kind of get that momentum going, you know, if you have experienced players, they kind of jump in and they'll kind of help when help is needed. And, you know, I think it just gets the creativity flowing because it is more than just rolling dice. And I think that there's a lot of very creative ways to be able to present that. I remember when I was, you know, when I was first a player, I was very by the book. I played a cleric for my very first character, and I was like, well, I'm a dwarf, so, you know, I'm going to be stubborn and have the stereotypical Scottish accent, you know, all these things. And I actually played with my wife, and she was a rogue, and we were fighting goblins and a warg. And she was looking through her inventory. She ended up setting the warg on fire. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, man, I never would have thought to even try that, you know?
Yeah.
And then that got my gears turning, like, all right, well, I want to do something cool. You know, what items do I have that aren't, you know, at first glance meant to do that? But, you know, so there's always things like that I think, you know, encourage creativity just in the setting and the way that you present things, because it is collaborative storytelling. So if you can present, you know,
an idea of this room in this dungeon that they're exploring, let them ask the questions. Maybe there wasn't a lever on that wall, but if they ask that there is, maybe you add it in. You know, don't...
Yeah.
You don't want to completely change your story, but you also don't want to stamp out their creativity, you know, for new players especially, I have found. But I think it's a lot of fun. It presents its own challenges when you are DMing for mixed experience groups. But it's some of the most fun I've had DMing or as a player, you know, having people of varied skill levels. Because even if we're all at the same skill or, you know, experience level, I should say, everybody's brain works differently. And I'm going to think one way and somebody else is going to think an entirely different way.
I will say that is one of my favorite things from mixed experience tables is that moment, like you said, where somebody that hasn't played for a while, you know, doesn't have their own rhythm that they're used to or preferences of spells or just sometimes just this built-in bias based on certain classes or experiences, and will throw something totally off the wall. And you see all the veteran players at the table are just like, I never would have thought to do that. What? And that is so cool. And then it's so validating for the new player because they feel like, hey, I'm the cool kid now, you know, and I get to contribute something. And those are really special moments that really only happen because of that. Exactly. You know, if you had all new players, they don't know what they can or can't do necessarily. So if they were to throw an off-the-wall idea, they're like, oh, okay, yeah. Whereas the veteran players, they're going to recognize that and really like, yes. And it comes off so genuine, and it's so much fun.
Yeah.
I think even as a DM, if you have a straightforward, again, using the goblins, if you just have goblins, try to think of inventive ways that the goblins could try to attack, you know. Don't just because they have a short bow and the other one has this doesn't mean that they can't do other things. If you can present to your players, clearly this is a low-level straightforward enemy, but they're still doing stuff that's kind of like off the book, then they may be, well, if that thing can do that, surely I can try something like that, you know. So I think there's always ways to just get the creative juices flowing and, you know, aid, you know, them
I in actually their, did that
creative endeavors.
I actually did that almost exactly to what you just said on my first game of this new campaign. The carnival got invaded by goblins for some reason. The party's still trying to figure out why, but if you look at the new goblin stats, they are enough to kill level one characters, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I was like, well, I don't want to do that. So I was like, okay, what can I do to make the fight interesting? So I had the goblins not interested in the party. They were interested in taking the NPCs hostage and lighting the carnival on fire.
There you go.
So it turned into this like, wait, why aren't they hitting us? Like, and they're only focused on the other. So it made it kind of like this like switch where they're like, wait, how can we think differently now too about something is up here? So it's pretty interesting. And that made me think about it. The other thing too, and just to kind of sew this up for new players, your hat made me think about this, Jared, because I saw this a long time ago where it was on Reddit. Like the one time Reddit was actually a wholesome place. The GM was like, so I have this new player and I color coded their dice. And they're different. So like they're like your D20 was red, the D12 was blue, and they color coded they printed out their character sheet. They color coded the things like this is what dice you would roll for this. This is what so it took the guessing element of like that's and awesome. I was like, that's genius. And your hat made me think about that.
Very smart.
to whoever is on Reddit, if you are the person that did that and you hear this, thank you. Any other thoughts, comments, concerns before we sew up tonight's episode?
Well, I think something that all of you guys kind of touched on, and I don't know if I did as well, but I like the idea of just being conscientious of the fact that just because you have new players doesn't mean you have to spoon feed the encounters mm-hmm. or, you know, mysteries or role play or combat to them. You can still be clever and creative and a little bit different because, I mean, the biggest thing is you don't want a new player who comes to the table to go, well, I mean, that kind of went exactly what I thought it was going to be like and or what I've heard. And yeah, it was OK. It was fun. You know, mm-hmm. It's always good to keep players, you know, no matter if they've played 20 years at D&D, to just keep them on their toes.
Yeah.
So.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and let's move into who wants to roll the D100 for our next topic for next episode.
I think I did it last episode, so it is one of the three of you, if memory serves.
I'll do it.
Pull up the list.
Yes.
Do it.
Got 99.
Oh,
all right. 99 problems, but a topic ain't one.
Yeah, I hope not.
I love that.
I hate that, but there it is.
And that's the title for episode 5.
I love that.
All right. So, 99. What is it?
D&D Beyond.
Okay. That's nice.
Sweet.
All right. A lot there.
Love that. That is probably one of the most used apps on my phone.
Yeah, definitely.
Very bad. Sorry. One of my favorite little D&D jingles is the one that Critical Role did for D&D Beyond. I've definitely listened to that a couple of times in a row. It just is so catchy.
No, oh, man. Well, I'll be listening to that until our next podcast. But from all of us here, we're the Story Crafters. Again, my name is Jeff. We have Nicole, Charlie, and Jared. We're the Story Crafters. That's going to be it for today's episode, guys. Thank you so much. Tune in next time for whatever else we get into over the next week or two, personally, D&D-wise. And also, too, let's talk about D&D. So, or D&D Beyond, to be more specific. D&D so until Beyond. Then, thank you very much. And we'll catch you in the next one. Thanks.